Welcome, listeners, to our 2008 Oscar series review of The Reader.
When I was young, I had an affair.
She was a friend of yours?
A kind of friend. She liked being read to.
You never tell me what you've been studying.
I'm studying a play. You can read it.
I'd rather listen to you.
Sing to me of the man, Muse, the man of twists
and turns, driven time and again off course.
Why do you leave early?
He always leaves early.
The affair only lasted a summer.
I can't live without you. Even the thought of it kills me. Do you love me?
So The Reader is a 2008 German-American romantic drama film directed by Stephen Daldry and written by David Hare, based on the 1995 German novel of the same name by Bernard Schlink. It stars Kate Winslet as Hannah Schmitz, Ralph Fiennes as Michael Berg, and David Cross as young Michael Berg.
The old Stephen Daldry here. Certainly got an impressive beginning to his director's career, hasn't he? The first three films he made, he got nominated for Best Director. Billy Elliot, The Hours, and The Reader.
That's quite an impressive start.
And his fourth film, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, didn't that get nominated for Best Picture as well?
Maybe.
I think it did.
I haven't seen it. Have you seen that?
No, definitely not.
Anyway, Stephen Daldry's first choice for the lead role was Kate Winslet, but she actually turned the offer down due to a scheduling conflict with Revolutionary Road.
I did see this, and they had lined up Nicole Kidman to come in and take the role. Thank fuck that didn't happen.
What? Not a Nicole Kidman fan?
Not really.
I don't mind her.
She's all right.
Yeah, she's fine.
She's kind of annoying.
Is she?
Yeah. Yeah, I think she is.
You wouldn't want Chase Meridian playing a German war criminal?
I didn't say anything about Chase Meridian. I said Nicole Kidman.
Just imagine Chase Meridian, the actual character of Chase Meridian playing...
Stop. You don't want to get me started while we're in the same room, Hendo.
Yeah, so I did read that when Nicole Kidman accepted the role, the producers actually built a hiatus in order to allow her to finish filming Australia at that time. However, by the time Nicole Kidman was ready to film her scenes, she had to pull out because of her pregnancy.
Yeah. And by that time, Kate Winslet had finished Revolutionary Road and was good to go.
Some other people who were considered for the role of Hannah Schmitz was Juliette Binoche, Angelina Jolie, Marion Cotillard, and Naomi Watts.
Fair enough. Some good choices there.
David Cross, who plays young Michael Berg, actually learnt how to speak English specifically for this film.
Which is crazy, because you wouldn't notice it watching the film. He speaks English very, very well.
Yeah, I didn't notice that at all.
It's interesting that this German film was filmed in English, and the writer specifically said they wanted it made in English.
Do you think that's because he wanted
more people to see it?
Maybe he wanted this story to get a wider audience. Not because I thought the way you said he wanted more people to see it was like, more money, more money, more money.
No. I mean, yeah, sure. But I agree with what you're trying to say, is that if you make a German film about Nazis, then a very limited number of people are going to see it. If you make an English spoken film with Hollywood actors and whatnot, it will get seen.
So, music by Nico Muhly. Do you know what else he did? It's actually a movie that we've broken down before.
Die Hard.
No, Margaret.
Oh, Margaret.
Yeah. One of your faves, yeah? Sorry, Chris. Cinematography by Chris Menges and Roger Deakins.
Explain.
Is this the first time we're talking about Mr. Deakins?
Is it?
No, it's not. He did No Country for Old Men.
Yes, yes. So apparently Deakins actually did all of the Ralph Fiennes scenes. And then Chris Menges came in and did all the, old style Kate Winslet scenes. And don't ask me who did the scenes when they're together. Sorry, scene.
The one scene.
Yeah.
Maybe they got together for that one. No, but Deakins, 13 Academy Award nominee, one win for Blade Runner 2049. He got nominated for, look at this list. Sicario, Unbroken, Prisoners, Skyfall, True Grit, The Reader, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, No Country for Old Men, The Man Who Wasn't There, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, Kundun, Fargo, and The Shawshank Redemption.
Some good films there.
That's just the ones he got nominated for.
Yeah.
Kundun, I liked it.
Nice.
But this did get released in America on the 12th of December in 2008 with a runtime of 124 minutes with a tagline of, how far would you go to protect a secret?
Not bad.
It's okay. With a budget of $32 million, it grossed $34 million in America and worldwide grossed $109 million.
Successful.
Absolutely. But this was nominated for 5 Academy Awards that year, won 1 for Best Actress.
Which is odd, isn't it? Because Kate Winslet actually won the Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress.
For Revolutionary Road?
For The Reader. And they weren't going to push for her to be lead actress because they were gonna push Revolutionary Road.
Have you seen Revolutionary Road?
No.
Neither have I.
I want to, though.
Isn't it the sequel to Titanic?
No. That's not even funny. Is that a joke, Endo? He died at the end of Titanic.
Oh, spoiler! Now, apparently, in Kate Winslet's Oscar speech, she deliberately did not mention Harvey Weinstein at that time, back in 2008. And it wasn't because of any, you know, sexual advances towards her. She just saw his aggressive business behavior with her over the years to be downright repugnant and therefore purposely did not thank him.
I did see that, and I went back and watched the Oscar win from Winslet. It was really weird the way they did it. They had five best actress winners come up on stage and each one presented one of the nominees.
That's what they did for the whole Oscars that year.
It's a lot of work.
I don't think it was an anniversary that year. Was it the 80th?
I have no idea.
Could have been. And they were like celebrating that.
Okay.
I remember that because Heath Ledger won Best Supporting Actor that year. Mm. And they had everyone up on the stage there. Mind you, I have gone and watched a couple of these videos during our 2008 Oscar series here. And they're long.
Yeah. They're very long.
Yeah.
Like they do each former winner does a long spiel on the nominee.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus.
Let's get to the win.
Skip, skip.
But four other nominations that year, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best Director, and Best Picture. Interestingly, producers Sidney Pollack and Anthony Minghella both died before the completion of the movie. So as the film was nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards, the Academy made an exception from their rules not to name more than three producers as nominees because of this rare circumstance.
Yeah, so they amended it to be no more than three living producers.
Wow.
I mean, they would have, surely.
I'm going to leave that one alone. But this does have an average of 7.6 over 220,000 ratings over on IMDb, the fourth highest of the Oscar series that we're doing.
Really? I'm looking forward
to... Don't say really. We spoke about this last week and probably the week before.
I'm looking forward to where this ranks in your five of 2008, Hendo.
As am I to you, sir. Why don't we find that out now?
No, let's not do it right now. We'll do it at the end.
So do you realize this is the fourth film in this series that has flashbacks? That basically tells a story in relation to flashbacks?
Okay. Milk, yes. Button.
Yeah.
Does it?
They're in the hospital. She's reading the book.
Yeah. This one, obviously. What else is there? Frost Nixon, no. Does Slumdog?
Yes.
Does it?
He's doing Millionaire and he's talking about...
That's right.
And then he's in the police station talking about his life.
All I remember from that is the Office when they parody it on stage. Have you seen that episode?
The Office one? I've seen all the Offices.
Michael and his good girlfriend, the one he really, really likes.
Amy Ryan.
Sure.
The one he ends up with.
Yes. It's really funny. Anyway, I'm surprised. They do like all the different sections of the office, like areas, go to like this camp day thing. And they're on stage acting out Slumdog Millionaire.
I vaguely... Is that like one of the season finales when they find out that they're pregnant? Pam and Jim?
Could be.
I think so. I think I remember that.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the reader.
Really? Can we talk about The Office?
We can if you want. You've been listening to Office Ladies?
I did listen to the first 3 minutes of the first episode.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Not for me.
I've listened to it all. They do this thing, though, which really bothers me. They'll be talking, and 10 minutes in, they'll be like, all right, Jenna, I think we should go for a break now. What do you think? I think that's a great idea, Angela. Okay, we're back. And it's like, it's a podcast. You can edit around all of that. It'd be like me and you saying, all right, let's have a break. Okay, we're back.
No, because with some podcasts, they, like the website or whatever that runs it basically, automatically put ads in those spots. So they don't have control on that.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a whole big automated ad placement thing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because in the first episode, they do it and they don't have any ads. But in the latest one, they did have an ad pop up. And I was like, oh, skip, skip,
yeah.
Skip.
Always skip. Except when you're listening to our promo, of course.
There's a gold, Hendo. Gold.
Anyway, back to the film.
Okay. Well, let's get into the crux of what is at least the beginning of this film, the Michael and Hannah relationship. Now, at the start, so he's sick. She sees him throw up. She helps him. He spends months away. And then he goes back and gives her flowers. And she catches him, like, getting a little spy on him, on her.
Yeah.
Which I understand from his point of view. Okay, I understand he's playing a 15-year-old here, sees a woman getting changed, he's going to look. And she tells him, like, don't look beforehand, like, I'm getting changed, go wait in the hall.
Yeah.
I don't understand why she's so into this. And I actually had a few issues with watching this relationship pan out. I could not understand what she was getting out of this. Whereas, obviously, I could see him, like, we know him, We follow it through him. We know what he's thinking and feeling, and we understand where he's coming from. And I know you're just going to say, well, she's getting the D, but I just
Wait a minute.
You give me that look. I just...
The D look.
The D look. The look I know so well.
Giving you that look that I wanted the D. The old Dean.
I did struggle with not knowing who this person was at all. And I realized, and as I was making some notes, and I sort of wrote down, like, I don't know this person at all. I assume we're going to get this. And having finished the film, I'm still not sure I understand why she would want a romantic relationship.
Because she is a woman. She has needs too, Dean.
Yeah, but she does not need to settle for a 15-year-old in this situation.
I can see your point. Maybe her options were limited back in the day.
Fair enough.
I did read that to avoid legal consequences, the crew had to film delaying the more sexually explicit scenes with David Cross until his 18th birthday, which happened in the middle of the shooting.
Hell of a birthday present. He's Kate Winslet, kid.
There's a lot of nudity in this film.
There's heaps, isn't there? Like, male and female.
Explicit nudity. I didn't expect to see some old penis in this film.
I was not expecting how many messages you were going to send me whilst watching this film about David Cross's penis. So thank you for that.
The total of one message.
It felt like a lot more. No, you were very excited.
Oh, dear.
One thing I did think about. What if the gender roles were reversed here?
This movie would have been incredibly controversial.
But why is that okay?
That's how it is, Dean. That's like, honest. The culture.
How old is Kate Winslet in this? She'd be mid-30s? No. We should know this because we do get years and ages for her.
Oh, I'd say she'd be about 40.
40 because already?
Because isn't it 20 years in prison and she's like roughly 60?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, okay.
But in the end, what's the difference between 30 and 40?
Okay, let's say she's 35 and he's 15.
Yeah.
Say that was a 35-year-old guy.
Yeah.
With a 15-year-old girl.
Yep.
Just, you know, the double standard here, it bothers me.
But that's the double standard in society. Like, not just for a movie from, you know, 11 years ago now depicting times way back in the day. We're talking about now as well. Situations that happen where, you know, like a female teacher is with a male student, and like everyone else, like, oh, that student, what a legend. Yeah, he's a top bloke. But if it's the other way around, it's like, oh, disgusting. That's so fucked. Like,
the age difference is never discussed in this film by anyone. It's never a topic. He could be playing an 18-year-old and it would not change the story at all.
Maybe they put his age at 15 to give him more of an innocence.
You're saying 18-year-old boys aren't innocent, Hendo? Actually, no, that does make sense, because if he was 18, you wouldn't be certain that this was his first love. Yeah. Whereas at 15, you're probably pretty safe there.
Yeah.
She's quite mean to him, though, at points, isn't she? Especially when he goes and sees her when she's working on the train, or the tram, sorry, and then she just storms off because she storms off when he goes to see her at the house, at her place, because he didn't speak to her. He's like, she says, why would you come on the tram if you weren't going to talk to me?
Yeah, it's because he gets in the carriage in the back.
Yeah, and he's doing what I would say any smart person would do is, you go and see her, but maybe... Actually, no, he wanted to kiss her, and she's like, you know, what are we going to have sex on the tram? He's like, yes.
Yes. Sick of this bath sex.
Must say, Kate Winslet's accent annoyed the fuck out of me like the first couple of scenes, and then it was like, I did not even notice it. It was really good.
Oh, I thought you were saying like her German accent was terrible, but you're just like, you know that it's Kate Winslet and she's putting on an accent.
Yeah, yeah. Would you agree with that?
No.
You didn't like it?
I don't agree that it annoyed me.
You agree that she does a good job with the German accent?
Yes.
But now we tend to really get into the actual reading. And this becomes obviously a huge storyline in this film. At what point did you realize she couldn't read?
When she signed her name as a scribble.
Oh, when was that?
When she's in prison.
Oh, wow. That's late.
Yeah. And that's when I caught and I'm like, oh, that is why he's reading to her. I thought she just liked people reading to her.
Nah, I realized not long after it started, because he gives her a book and you do see a flashback of this. She throws it away. And I was like, oh my God, can she not actually read? And then when she's looking at the menu, I was like, how would you not know at the menu scene?
Just didn't occur to me.
Crazy. I must say I was interested in the character of Hannah.
I wanted to know where this story went. I'm telling you, like, the whole love story between them, it went on for a very long time.
See, I didn't think so at all. Like, when they go on their little bike ride holiday thing and she sees the choir singers singing and she starts crying. I'm just like, what is going on with this woman? All right, here's another question for you. At what point did you realize this was going to turn into something that has to do with war?
Before the movie started, because I knew what the plot was about.
Okay. I had no idea. And I must say, fantastic.
Yeah, this needed this. Because when this romance story was happening, I was like, okay, I know that there's going to be some sort of war crime coming up. Can we get to that, please? Let's get some conflict going on here.
Yeah, I had no idea that this wasn't a romance for the entire 2 hours.
Yeah, let's get to the trial here.
Yeah, the trial. And here's, I mentioned the Kate Winslet one for Best Supporting Actress at Golden Globe, right? That's what threw me. So I thought when he walks into the apartment and she's gone, like 45 minutes into the movie, I thought she legitimately could have been done for the movie.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, that's it?
Yeah, supporting is bizarre. She's the main person in this film.
Yeah. She's got more screen time than anyone else. So I was so happy to see her come back here. That was a big shock when he looks up and sees that she's on trial here. I was very excited when this started because all this trial stuff, we're talking about the crimes.
Do love a good courtroom drama type film, so this was no different.
You do or you're saying I do?
No, I do.
Oh, I love courtroom drama stuff. And I love, like, love's a strong word. I'm very interested in Holocaust and World War II stories.
Isn't Judgment at Nuremberg
the same? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is.
Which is a great film.
It really is.
Yeah, this was good. I like how she is... She's very truthful in the stuff she's saying. And she acts like the other, the four other women who are involved here, they seem to be withholding a lot of information.
Well, not seem to. They outright are.
And she's just like, yeah, it's true. We did it. What are you shocked about? We did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, what were we meant to do? I was a guard. They were my prisoners. I couldn't let them escape.
I did find it interesting how she mentioned, or the other women would mention that she would pick out the weak to read to her and then dispatch them. Kind of felt like sort of the relationship she was having with Michael as well.
Yeah, that was a massive, like, when she said, when we heard that she picks these people to read to her, I was like, oh, what a slap in the face to Michael. But there's just so many great questions raised in this bit. Like, the professor, Bruno Gantz?
Yeah, interestingly, played Hitler in The Downfall.
Yep. He asked some great questions when they're talking about all these murders in Auschwitz in general. And he's saying, well, the question is never, is it wrong? It's, is it legal? And I feel like the sort of second half crux of this film is, how does Michael feel about, you know, what is clearly the love of his life, despite only spending one summer with her?
Mm.
How does he feel about this person having committed such atrocities, murders? And how does he come to sort of accept it, that that's a part of who she is? I found it fascinating, I must say.
I do love the shot of when he goes to visit the old camps and there's just all the piles of shoes piled up in there. I do like the discussion they have about the fact that there's so many other camps with so many other people that have done this. Why single out these specific women to be put on trial and no one else?
Here we get, you talked about the tagline, and really it's about this bit here where she would rather accept blame for all of it and say, yes, she's in charge, rather than actually admit to the court that she couldn't write. I never understood why.
Yeah, me neither.
Is it just that she's ashamed of not being able to write, but she holds no shame of being a ringleader to murder hundreds?
Well, that's what she said. That's what she says in her trial. She's like, this was my job. What did you expect me to do? I signed up for this and this was the thing I had to do.
Yeah, I just didn't understand. Like, she can't read or write. It's not like she's dyslexic because she teaches herself later.
Yeah.
It just, I found it all odd. Why wouldn't she, if she cared that much, why wouldn't she try and learn sooner?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I just.
But honestly, how could she have learned? Was there anyone there to teach her? Like she.
As a kid, why didn't she learn as a kid like everyone else?
Maybe she had bad parents who didn't put her in school or didn't teach her how to read, or it's not her fault when she's an 8-year-old that she didn't teach herself how to read or write.
I don't know. We didn't really get anything. Like what? Yeah. Is the shame of not being able to write so much, so great that...
No, it's not. It is not.
No, but from obviously for her it is.
Like, imagine if she was like, I didn't know how to read or write, and like the whole court's like, oh, God, shock trial.
Yeah.
They'd be like, who cares?
No one would care, and they'd know that she's not the leader because they're saying that she wrote this whole report by herself sort of thing, but no. But no, the others get a 4-year sentence, and she gets life, which is, what, 20 years?
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty soft verdicts, sentences.
For the others.
All of them?
Yeah, it is.
Even having her as the leader, Like 20 years, not a lot for 300 lives. Minimum, mind you.
I thought she was going to get death.
Yeah. But no, we're back to Ralph Fiennes.
I like the transition that you get between young Michael into older Michael when he's on the train and like the shadow goes past and it, bang, it's Ralph.
Yeah.
That was good.
I must say, I did like these scenes between Ralph and his daughter.
Yeah, what did you make of this whole side plot here with his daughter?
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Because he was really honest, and I like when he's honest. Because you feel like this, when he says to her, like, I was never open with anyone, it's not your fault, you know, I could have done better, and she broke down, I was like, oh, that's so touching.
That was good.
Yeah. Did you like the old Kate Winslet makeup? It was pretty low-key. I thought it was believable.
Low-key is the right answer. Like, it's...
believable?
Yeah, it's there, it's not in your face. It's fine. I like the process of her learning to read, like how she managed to do it by like following the. And they're like, okay, that's that. Oh, there's all those other ones. And gradually learning from there.
And then when she starts writing to him, that was good.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't write back.
Do you think he didn't expect that?
No, of course not.
No. He thinks he's just giving her stuff to listen to. Can you imagine that? He gets something back. It's like, more, please. Like, holy shit.
But the dedication of someone to do that for someone else.
But never visit, never interact.
Yeah. And when the other person reaches out to interact, you, nah, don't want to.
He's not ready.
She really messed him up.
Oh, absolutely. How do you think it would have gone when he was a kid and she told him about everything?
I think he would have been okay with it. I mean, he's okay with it when he's, what, 18, 19. So what difference would it make to him?
But that's the thing. Like, for her, it's not a secret that she's keeping. So it's not like, well...
I think it is. She was reluctant to even tell him that her name was Hannah.
Yeah, fair enough. What about the one scene interaction between them when he finally comes to visit? When he finds out that she's actually getting out now and...
Very awkward.
She needs a place to stay and you're the only one who's ever had any contact with her.
I felt bad for Hannah.
Yeah, it was rough.
Because she's been building... This moment would be so huge in her life. And he seems virtually disinterested.
Yeah, super distant. Basically just there to...
Yeah, I've organized for you somewhere for you to stay and get a job, which is super nice. Like, he obviously cares for her. He's just not willing to, I guess, admit to himself that he does.
Yeah, and that it's that awkwardness of when they're going... He's going to leave and they're both standing there and you know she wants some affection, a hug or something. Yeah. And he just rejects it and leaves. That's heartbreaking. You get a little symbolism here where she hangs herself by standing on all the books that he's given her or she's been reading because of him.
Yep.
What about this interaction with the daughter of this fire survivor?
Yeah, one of the best scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
It was really good. Like, it really does lay out. And what their motivations are, basically. Like, what are they trying to take away from these experiences? And she doesn't want to give him any absolution. She doesn't want to help him and, you know, I don't want to take this money because it sort of symbolizes, right, that's made it okay now.
Mm.
And, like, I get all that. I do. But I think the performances from both Ralph Fiennes and the other person were really good.
and I like how they boil it down to literature. Like, we'll use the money to expand into reading and writing, which is, you know, what the crux of this film is really about.
And a great last scene as well.
Yeah, we finally,
taking the daughter to the grave. And
yeah. It was good. It was a good ending.
It was. It was a good film. Final thoughts, Hendo?
I must admit, the first half of this film, I definitely struggled with everything that was happening, this romantic relationship. It started off okay, but it kept going, and I just wanted something else to happen. When it got to the war crime, the trial, and everything else after that, it really did pick up, especially when Ralph Fiennes comes into it. I think the character of Michael and the struggles he goes through from his young age up into when he's an adult and this, you know, weird relationship he had with Hannah to where he ends up at the end with his own relationship with his daughter, I think it actually works kind of well. I think Ralph Fiennes puts in a pretty decent performance, but I really feel like Kate Winslet is very, very strong in this movie. Her performance throughout the whole film, I can see why she won the award here. Did you see the other nominations?
Rachel getting married, so Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep for something, Angelina Jolie for, I think, she didn't win in Unbroken. Changeling. And Marion Cotillard for, I don't know, some French film probably.
Yeah, so I haven't seen any of those other four.
I saw Rachel getting married. I saw Changeling. Changeling's good.
Is that the one with the kid goes?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I have seen that.
I could see Angelina Jolie of winning for that. But I think,
I think Winslet is the best choice there out of him. I think she puts in a really good performance. I know I didn't say a lot throughout this. It's just there wasn't too much that resonated with me with this film. Like, it just took a long time to get into it. And when it did, it was decent. But I think overall, the movie's kind of an overall slog for me. It's a weak 2.5 for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, this film did resonate with me. I think the story is so fascinating. It's so interesting to see how all these people react to what was going on and what was okay for a time that is now seen as just horrific. I thought it was really powerful. I didn't, like, the start was slow, but it wasn't bad slow. It was just, okay, here's a standard love story, but she's much older and she likes being read to. That's okay. But when it turns to the trial, I was so on board. I was just glued to my screen like there was no tomorrow. I think you say, like, when it got to Ralph Fiennes, it picked up. I don't think so. I think the boy,
David Cross.
Thank you. David Cross was fantastic in this. He really does carry it. And to see that he learnt English for this movie is just crazy how smooth he was with it. Yeah, I just think there's so much to get into with this film. There's so many, like, big life questions. And, you know, you sort of think, on how would you feel if, you know, the person you loved, you learned, had done all these crazy things? Maybe crazy is not the right word, but, you know, horrific things. It's, I don't know, it got me thinking. It was cool. It was really interesting. Great performances all around. I give it a strong 3.5.
Very good. Glad you enjoyed it.
Me too.
All right, we're up to the best picture winner, mate, Slumdog Millionaire. Now, this is a top 250 film, so this will be a full-on breakdown, and it will be available to all tier levels of the patrons.
Yeah, can't wait.
All right, so thank you very much, patrons, and we'll see you next time for Slumdog Millionaire.
Bye.